Okay, today we are talking about the brain. We're going to get into a bit of neuroscience, behavior, psychology. This is the stuff that gets me jazzed up, man. Like, this is cool. This is sort of that secret sauce. As I talk all about process and the things that you can do, and that's where I think a lot of people, they struggle with, is process. They try and do just a bunch of stuff. My goal here today is to help you understand more about how people make decisions, a little bit more in depth about how our brain works, and some of the challenges that we have in influencing people to see things our way. And this is not about, like I said, trickery, manipulation, nothing like that. These are things that you can use for good rather than evil. And when you start to apply this with the lesson on testing, you start to see really, really cool ways that your language and process actually moves your customers towards a better decision. So this one is, we're talking also about objections as well and handling objections. And that when you're handling objections, they actually don't exist. So we're going to get into that. Over the last decade, you know, for me, I've been really excited to study psychology. Some great books that I've read is The Winner's Brain, Science of Influence by a guy named Kevin Hogan. One I love is Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman. And I study psychology. I love this stuff. And really, a lot of the breakthroughs have happened over the past decade, understanding about what we do, right? And neuroscience, psychology, behavior, really, really exciting stuff. And in the last lesson, we talked about selling in stages and helping your buyers make decisions using those smaller micro commitments. And we also looked at the one of the tools that we talk about is a reciprocity and concessions. So today we're going to go a bit deeper. And my goal here, like I said, is there's a lot to learn. There's a lot of stuff to do. All I want you to do is have a few key like aha moments where you're like, oh, that makes total sense. And try and increase your ability to be more self-aware. Start to be a more observant about the things that are going around you. This, it's going to make you feel like you kind of have superpowers. Once you start to understand this a little bit more in depth, it's going to make your conversations when you're selling and also your relationships, your normal stuff, that much easier. So, take some time, read through this, go through it, try and understand it and apply it. It's going to be really cool. So the first part I'm going to talk to you about, I've written about this before, is the three-part brain. Your brain, it's called the triune brain, and it's basically just the way your brain has evolved. The first brain that I talk about is your reptilian brain, and this is primarily for survival. We all hear about fight or flight, and that's the first thing that was basically developed. That's how we evolved, and it's essentially, it's towards the bottom, right by the brain stem, and the most primitive brain. It's the one that controls those basic functions, breathing, heartbeat, and especially that fight or flight that we say. It's really important to understand that this is one of the driving forces in our brain. It's the thing that makes us go, I trust that guy, I don't trust that guy. This makes me feel good, this makes me feel bad. Danger, not danger. It's what we identify threats as. And a lot of times when we get that icky feeling about somebody selling to us, that's the reptilian brain kicking in saying, hold on. Okay? The second system in your brain is called your limbic brain. And it's all about what? It's about your emotions, right? It's really cool. It's the next part of our brain to evolve, and it wraps around the brainstem. And it's pretty much what forms, we call it the seat of our emotions, and also in our memory. It's the one that draws us towards things that feel good and away from things that feel bad. And we all know that most of our decisions are based on emotions. The third part is called the neocortex. This is the newest brain, and it's kind of surrounds the limbic system. And what that's for is basically our thinking brain. And it's part of speech, planning, visualization. It's got the two hemispheres, the right and the left. And essentially what happens is it's our neocortex that most of us try and hammer with features and benefits. It's so important to understand that when you're talking to somebody and you're talking at that neocortex, you're tapping into their emotions. They're trying to figure out whether they like you, don't like you, and that reptilian brain is kicking in on fight or flight. So rather than trying to sound right or smart with your information, you need to tap into that limbic system and make people feel good about just working with you and being around you. And you need to tap into their emotions, tap into their associative memories when you're presenting information. And then tomorrow in our next lesson, we're going to talk a bit about storytelling and some of the things you can do to actually to avoid having to talk to the neocortex, essentially. See, we've been taught, you know, usually when I talk to salespeople, they're bombarded with developing product knowledge. They want to know all the stuff because they want to sound smart and they want to have the right answer. And so they go and hammer their customers with this stuff, features and benefits. It's just like beating people over the head. And it's that interrogate, judge, fix model, which is what's broken in the system. The more you learn about how we process this information from the middle to the outside of our brain, the more it's really, really helpful for you to start to see things in different ways. How many times have you ever been in a sales conversation and you knew you were right in what you were saying, but the other person just didn't get it, right? And you're wondering, like, what do I have to do to convince them? Or somebody says no, or they object to what you're saying, and you go, hold on, let me explain. And the more and more you try and explain, the worse it gets. That's because we're making them feel bad, and the fight or flight is kicking in. There's nothing you can say at that point. Your job is to make people feel good about dealing with you, right? One of the activities I've mentioned here is that I do with all my training is we look at features and benefits. We look at the way that you're positioning your offer, the way that you're positioning your marketing, your sales language, and then we make sure that we incorporate the feelings and the emotions that you're trying to get out of your clients. The sort of the hot buttons we talk about, but looking for those triggers of when you have somebody and what you're trying to get them to feel. If we can do that, it's big time, right? So what my question to you is that once you know that most of our decisions are based on emotions, how are you going to plan to emotionally connect with your audience? And how are you going to bypass that fight or flight and the BS meter? Okay. The second part of this is I want to talk about that we are, one of the things I love about the psychology I read is that we are the worst predictors of our own future behavior. It's really cool. Once I started to learn this, it's cool and it's bad that most of the time, we can't really figure out why we make decisions. And how many of us, we'd agree that sometimes we have just no idea why we do things, right? There's so much stuff happening. And when you start to learn about this, it's really, really cool. Stuff that I talk a lot about is priming, framing, anchoring, primacy. It's all about kind of the order and the presentation, the language that you use. It's the way that you say things, the way that you present things. There's so many little ways that you can do things right. And there's so many little ways that you can push people away. So it's really important to understand that if you are having a hard time predicting your own future behavior, it's even worse for your client, your buyer. When you're presenting things to people, they're trying to make decisions with incomplete information. It's the same reason that we interpret random events as something that is true. We try and figure out these things are just happening sporadically as a pattern. We look at this all the time. We look at reports. We try and figure out what's going on. But the truth is, there's so much randomness out there, we don't really know what's happening. So the first thing is that starts to make us feel like, oh no, you know, what's the point of doing anything if I can't predict? My goal here is to help you just start to be a little bit more observant with the things that you're doing. Look at the body language of the people you're talking to. Look at the ways that your words make an impact. Tomorrow we're going to talk a bit more about that too. When you're dealing with somebody, we talked about testing. Everything you do, you should be testing. So if you're actually resonating with someone and you're getting into the emotional side, you can see when somebody wants to work with you or work against you. Your job always, I remember years ago I had an office and I set up the office just like a living room so that I had, you know, a couch and a chair and it was different than just the standard desk. And the reason I did that is I just wanted to see more body language in the people that I worked with and the potential customers. Because when they came in, I could read so much more about them. And it became almost a game to me to figure out the kinds of things that I could do to help people lean in more and get them engaged with what I was doing. A lot of fun. A simple idea like a confirmation bias has huge impact on the way that you position your words. And I've got that here as well. If I said, you know, is Andy friendly? You would feel something different than if I said, is Andy unfriendly? it's priming, it's a confirmation in your mind of trying to make sure, does this statement make sense? So you start to seek out the things that confirm that language. So in your day-to-day language, what are the things that you're saying that your customers are confirming? Okay. Your job here is not to use these skills for evil. My job is to help you be what I call a sales hero, because sales in itself is a heroic act. So by understanding this stuff, your job is actually to rescue your buyers from buying hell. Does that make sense? That your job is to help people move towards better decisions and away from this natural resistance that we have if people present information to us incorrectly. Okay. And that's where the next part comes in. This part is really powerful. The concept of objections. And I talked about in lesson one, some of the sales history, and that most people, when they're training in sales, they're learning about how to handle objections. And I cringe when I think about, you know, this whole, you know, when somebody says no to you, here's what you do. Your job is not to handle no's and not to try and convince people to change their mind. Your job is to make it really easy for them to buy from you. And that's what, so all the preparation that you do ahead of time is so that when you get into these conversations, you actually create a really cool buying atmosphere and people enjoy buying. I remember I told you about the car that I wanted to buy. That's fun to do. When people come to buy from you, are you making it fun for them by reducing that resistance and tapping into their emotions? And when you are handling objections, the powerful thing is that somebody has said no to something. So if they say, I don't think I have the money, or maybe it's not the right time, and then you try and convince them otherwise, the thing is it's much harder to get them to say yes after they said no, because their previous behavior sets a precedent, right? And we know that we're genetically wired for this fight or flight. So you're just constantly battling genetics. You're constantly battling our hardwired way that we do things. So why would you do that? This is what blows my mind. Okay, I'm getting off topic here. So keep in mind that there's really no new objections since the beginning of time. Pretty much look at your market and all the objections kind of sound like this. I don't know if we're ready to do this. I'm going to look at some other options and get back to you. We've tried that and it hasn't worked. I need more details. I need references. We have no guarantees. We have other priorities. I need to talk to my boss, my wife, my nanny, my dog, whatever it is. I've got a whole list of objections here, but there's only really four main objections that you deal with. No money. 2, no urgency. 3, no need. And 4, no trust. Now, I'm not going to get into how to deal with those. There's so many things I can cover with you on how to work through objections into the specific language around this. But what I want you to understand is that rather than handling objections, let's reduce resistance. And there's two kinds of resistance. The first one is called knee-jerk or reactance. It's that natural thing where we go, no, we push against something. No matter, even if it's good for us, we say no because of that fight or flight. The other resistance we have is called anticipated regret. And anticipated regret is where we start to see what would our life be like if we made this decision and it didn't work. So stick with me. It's knee-jerk or anticipated regret. So when you hear an objection in the sense that we've talked about, it's usually just reactant. Somebody saying no to what you've done. And to properly counter that no, you should start to work towards minimizing those knee jerks from happening in the first place, and then painting a future that actually doesn't have any regret. So people start to minimize that regret. So before you get any no, just know those are the two things that are happening. So instead of telling somebody to do something, get them to visualize a different, exciting future. Now, it sounds simple, but it takes a lot of work to do this. It's something that you have to start to apply and put into practice. So in the next lesson, I'm going to go through some ways that you can actually use storytelling and conceptual agreement to try and reduce or eliminate those potential no's from happening in the first place. All right, so this is cool, right? This is like, I like this stuff. You can probably tell. I get pumped up. And when I talk about it, it gets even more fun when you apply it, when you actually try this stuff. And again, like I said, it's not about trying to manipulate people. This is about understanding why we do the crazy things we do. Like for me, I know that so many times I do stupid stuff. So part of the thing is I study the psychology stuff to realize, why am I so Looney Tunes? Because we're all like this, right? And so I'll leave you with the last thought. And I've got a video on this email is it reminds me of, you know, at the end of the Matrix, the first Matrix, when Neo starts to realize, you know, there is no spoon, and he sees the agents and he sees everything in like numbers and symbols. There's been a number of times when I've been in that state of flow, which we'll talk about, I think, in Lesson 7. But when you get in that state of flow where you start to see all of the behaviors, when you start to apply this stuff, you see it just like in the Matrix, and you go, oh, it actually becomes really interesting to be able to see the subtle changes in body language, the subtle changes in tone and demeanor, and the things, the pacing, the way that you present information. It becomes really, really almost like this art. But sales isn't just an art. It's a process. And by applying this stuff, it becomes more artful. And I keep referencing, you know, the idea that it you have to do the hard work to make selling look easy. So when you're in this natural state of flow and understanding the psychology, it is quite easy, and people love working with you, and you're helping them make great decisions because you understand what's going on in their head better than they do, right? So remember that scene in the Matrix, and I've got a link to the video here, and it just always gets, that's the kind of feeling that I want to get when I'm selling something to somebody, is just to see, you know, am I moving them towards a good feeling or towards a bad feeling? So I'm glad you've made it this far. If you're listening to this, you're already halfway through this bootcamp that I'm putting together, and you're going through the content, and it's not easy. This is big stuff. And so, you know, to get your game to the next level, don't worry about overcomplicating all this stuff. We're going through all this. You got to take it step at a time. You got to apply this step at a time over time, and you got to be willing to get uncomfortable, which we'll talk about as well. So that's it for this one, and I'm going to throw it out there. This one here, I'm giving you guys lots of cool value. But if you want my help in either working with your specific sales challenge, whether it's working with your sales team, whether you need some insights on your processes, or you'd like me to come speak in an event, I've got a link. Contact me and let's see if it's a good fit. And I always like to say I love traveling, so I can do things virtually or I can come visit you. I love this stuff. So tomorrow we're going to dive into some storytelling. And one of the really cool, powerful tools I use is conceptual agreement. I've learned that years ago from $1 million consultant Alan Weiss. And it's just about presenting something before you even give them a price. So I'm looking forward to sharing that with you guys, and I hope you enjoyed this lesson. We'll talk to you tomorrow.